Blog Talk Radio.
So you're a philosopher? You're a philosopher?
Yes.
You're a philosopher?
Yes. 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 Yes.
You're a philosopher?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, you're a philosopher?
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
Oh yeah, here we go again. What's going on, people? What's going on? Philly Phil on the microphone here. Welcome to the philosophy. We always bump it up a little bit at the beginning. We got a little after hour party going on, you know what I'm saying? That's how we do it. That's how we do it. Welcome to the show, everybody. Welcome to the show. My name, of course, is Philly Phil. And as always, we explain that that's spelled with an F, F-I-L-I. And the second word is F-I-L. And the philosophy is spelled with an F. And we're back for another week. Got the overseer engineer plugging things from the upper heavens, overseeing everything. We are here. We are here. Call-in number, if you want to call in, is 914-205-5568. That's the call-in number. And we have a topic that is trending, very, very trending topic. It has to do with NWA, Straight Outta Compton. It's been the rave. Overseer, did you know that the largest amount of people that actually saw the show, the movie, at one time was right down on 17th Street that weekend? They said that down there at 17th Street, downtown Atlanta, had more people see the movie there than anywhere else in the country. In the country. I thought that was real interesting. So we got a lot of supporters of NWA here, right here in Atlanta. And I was there that night too. And what's interesting is when I was standing in the line waiting to get tickets, police officer comes up and says, just for your information, we don't allow scarves, head scarves on the head. And it caught me by surprise. I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't even know I had one on. Everybody knows I got locks. So I got this headscarf on to keep my locks from flapping around. He walks up to me and says, you can't wear the scarf. Then he says, but I understand you're holding your hair down. So we'll let it slide this time. But just for your information, next time, don't wear it. And I thought that was really interesting. They're hitting up people with headscarves. And I guess I looked at it in the mirror and I said, okay, I had a blue one on. So now I'm thinking, okay, they're basically trying to be extra careful because they think that there might be some gangbangers in blue and red scarves and all of that drama. I think that those days, I think they're being a little extra careful. And some girls was there, you know, and I asked them, I said, why you didn't say nothing? You gonna let them dog the bug out? Like, I think that they were really, you know, really trying to quell something that is probably not as much of it as an issue as it used to be. But needless to say, we're talking about the movie Straight Outta Compton. NWA, it was a biopic. And of course, the members out of NWA, very, very famous group from F the Police to a lot of other songs. MC Ren, DJ Yellow, Eazy-E, Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, Arabian Prince. A lot of people don't know that last one, Arabian Prince. is because he left the group to start his own, to go solo. And really, his record sales were so low, you couldn't hear him. He didn't do too well. So, but yeah, Public Enemy. Anyway. And the question is, speaking of Public Enemy, I've been listening to a lot of information as I gathered information for this show. There's a lot of different sides to people. There's a lot of different divisions in whether or not NWA was responsible for the demise of black conscious rap, whether or not it was freedom of speech. But even if you have freedom of speech, you can still go too far. There's a lot of questions and ideas of, you know, whether or not they should have taken the liberty to talk about all the misogyny and the brutality and some of the violence against women, all of those things. And all of those things are relevant points. And we're going to get into that as we proceed through the show. Do we have a question? You know, can we put a question out there? Let's put a question out there. Let's find out and just say, look, to put the question out there, Overseer, and see what they think about, did NWA gangster rap eclipse black conscious rap? And let's see what kind of answers we get from that. Because I'm curious to know. There's a lot of different perspectives. There's a lot of different perspectives on that. And I've been listening to you guys as I, you know, your comments and stuff. And we're also going to get into some of the music, you know. And NWA was an interesting group. And a lot of people think that they were just, just knuckleheads in, you know, you got Suge Knight in there. You know, you got a lot of drama in there. But we're going to dig deeper on some of the underlying things that made that group successful over time, all the way up to today. And the people and some of the people in that group, how much they've actually developed other groups and made themselves larger from their humble beginnings. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into our topic. So we're going to run. Let's start out with, you guys know the cut. We'll start out with the original version, because see, we're gonna show you how some of these songs that Dr. Dre did, the parallels of how he got some of those songs from other places. So we're gonna start out with this first cut. We're gonna play Leon Haywood, and you guys are gonna hear the music from a G Thing in there that he used to make the G Thing cut. And we'll be right back. I'll see you on the other side, people. Okay, go ahead and run that G Thing. Do we have that G Thing? Let's run that one so they can see it. Oh, we don't have that one? Okay, that's all right. All right, well, let's come out of that one. All right, we'll get that other one back to you guys later. That actually is the original cut Leon Haywood, you can hear it all in there. He copied the whole thing, basically. You know, the only thing you don't hear is Snoop. 1, 2, 3, 2, 4. You know, but I mean, you hear the whole song, the bridge, everything is in there of what they did. And we'll put that other one on the other side so you guys can hear the parallels. But hell, really, you can hear the whole song right there. And that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about music and being creative. None of these groups, I mean, Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, I mean, they were trying to really be successful and they're trying to make their mark. And a lot of times, you know, the best way that you can actually ensure success is use something that was already somewhat popular and then adjust it a little bit and add some other stuff to it. And so a lot of the stuff that NWA did was not necessarily landmark stuff. And I say that to say this. When you think about NWA, like Overseer, when you think of NWA and how they talk about how it was really, there was a lot of cursing, there was a lot of misogyny. If you look back at the time frame of black cinema at that particular time, you know, you had Rudy Ray Moore, Richard Pryor, Red Fox. You had them doing some of the same stuff. Red Fox and Richard Pryor, are you trying to tell me that NWA was worse than Red Fox and Richard Pryor? I'm not totally condoning NWA. All I'm saying is that we have to keep it in perspective, because I'm going to say this, and this is going to be our theme through the whole show, that we black people, we take things very, very literal in the black community and everything that we do. Very, very literal. Too literal. We take the Bible too literal. We take rap lyrics too literal. You know, we take movies too literal. We take everything so literal that it becomes our part of our being, because we absorb it, as Overseer would like to say, into our DNA. And I would agree with that. And I think that if we tapered back some of those aspects, that we wouldn't be so caught up in trying to decipher and say, hey, you know, well, this was this and this was this. You would just say, look, that's entertainment. When Arnold Schwarzenegger makes a movie and he's slinging blades and cutting people's heads off with blades and commando, nobody takes that serious. They say it's a movie. And a person's getting paid. They don't think that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a gangster. They just think that he's making a movie. And my question is, how come they don't look at NWA in some ways with that same perspective, is what I kind of thought about. You know, nobody really took Richard Pryor serious. It was jokes. Red Fox, Rudy Ray Moore. Rudy Ray Moore used to talk about white women all the time, call them bitches and everything. He cursed like crazy. And then I think on one of our past shows, we talked about Aunt Esther, which NWA used one of her stand-up comedy routines talking about the world's biggest dick in one of their songs. So they're getting some stuff from some of the older stuff, and they're just regurgitating and then taking it maybe a little farther, of course. And so I wanted to bring that perspective in there, that you have different avenues of people that are revolutionary in their thoughts, in their songs, in their movies. And NWA, in certain ways, not all of them, again, not all of them, you know, that they had that position too. I mean, how many of you guys know about The Last Poets? The Last Poets? No, Gil Scott-Heron wasn't part of The Last Poets. A lot of people think he was. He was. He worked with them on a couple of shows, but he wasn't part of it. He had his own crew. But The Last Poets, one of their two most famous cuts was The White Man's Got a God Complex, and the other one was Die, Nigga, Die. That was one of their famous cuts. And NWA used that sample. Because basically all they're saying is die, nigga, niggas always dying, niggas always dying. And they go through this whole plethora of things. And they're saying nigga. Not N-word. And so I say all that to say that in a lot of ways, people that I've been listening to, they're trying to kind of make it seem like NWA had just came out of nowhere with all this stuff. And I just gave you all of these different things from Rudy Ray Moore, Gil Scott-Heron, The Last Poets, Red Fox. Black movies back then were mostly X-rated because you couldn't get a movie made without using union workers if it wasn't X-rated. And so that kind of puts you in a quandary. And so they were using some of the stuff that had already been done. They just did it from a younger perspective. Yeah, you can go ahead and run that real quick. This is the G thing, and we played that Leon Haywood before. We wanted to just throw a little 15 seconds so you can see the similarities of Dr. Dre's version. Go ahead and run that.
Yeah. This is DJ Charmaine Champagne. And this is your Chronic Dial radio station. So you got to be listening to the Chronic. These are sounds from the brother side of the desk. Something real. So let me put this bill in your
ear.
Come on in, baby.
Hope you picking them up to find a job.
Yeah, we're going to work so we can grow up and be just like you.
Hey, y'all going to the picnic today?
Yeah, thought you knew. Huh.
Hey, Snoop!
What up? Ask
my grandma, you know, I'm Mr. Bond.
1, 2. Bring it to the phone. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope. Ready to make an entrance, so back on up.
Before I have to pull the strap off the cut.
Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Cause ain't nothing but a G-thang, baby. Two low-def G, so we crazy. Death Row is the label that pays, man. Unfadable, so please don't try to fake this.
Hell
but
yeah.
Back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'ma let them understand. From a young G's perspective, and before me, they got a trick. I have to find a contraceptive. You never know, she could be earning her, man.
Yeah, you can cut it. You can cut it. Yeah, we can cut that. Yeah, so that's the Dr. Dre version, and you rewind a little bit back, you hear the Leon Haywood, same song. So what I'm saying is that they're not really making new stuff. You know, it's good to use some of the stuff and then add to it. I'm not dissing that. I'm an artist myself. We call it sampling and stuff like that. But I'm saying even the music wasn't really that unique because they're taking older stuff and they're kind of revamping it. The same thing with their ideas with some of the stuff that came from Gil Scott-Heron, Rudy Ray Moore, Richard Pryor, Red Fox, Last Poets. All of those are regurgitations. So I'm saying that NWA didn't do something brand new. They did it from a new perspective, and we can't forget Ice-T. Ice-T is really the progenitor. He's the one that actually was out before NWA and had the first record, Gangsta 6 in the Morning. He'll tell you, and most people will say, if you put 6 in the Morning and Boys in the Hood back to back, you know, hear them both at the same time, it's the same thing. It's the same song. So Ice-T was really the first one out with it. But the song F the Police that came out in 1988 really changed the whole scope and aspect of how rap was being looked at. Because, see, we were only in about 9 years at the time. You figure Rapper's Delight came out at about 79. So you figure gangsta rap came in at about, you know, 86. Is when NWA started creeping in, and they come out in 88 with F the Police. Now, so you figure you got about 8 years in. Public Enemy is blowing up. Public Enemy got the song Fight the Power that came out, you know, a little while right after, you know, little while after F the Police. So you got two songs that are almost similar in title and similar in the time frame that they came out. F the Police and Fight the Power. You know, basically FTP, both of them. Fight the Power, F the Police. FTP on both of them. Coming out around the same time, you know, give or take, you know, 7-8 months or so. And both of them in totally different directions. Totally different directions. One is talking about fighting the power that be, but they're saying it from a standpoint of upliftment. And the other one is fighting the power, saying that these are the people that's messing with us, so F them. So one, it's like a difference of semantics of how you look at it. You know, two songs around the same time frame, both FTP, one of them fighting the power system and saying it in a way that is kind of like uplifting. The other one is just a condemnation of the specific group of people, of law enforcement. And it produced two different results. And that's what I want to really get into. The result was two different things, right? In one aspect, gangster rap started picking up steam. Conscious rap started receding a little bit. Because the gangster element always, and that's not just in black music, the gangster element has always intrigued people more than conscious thought. That's just part of the way we basically kind of are built, everybody. Everybody's always interested in the gangsters and different, you know, Lucky Luciano and Giancana and, you know, and all of them guys. They're always intrigued with them. Bonnie and Clyde, you know, it's always that. So the gangster aspect is more sellable than the conscious. And so we just got caught up in the aspect of the you know, I'm not saying that the whole part of the music being pushed to specifically suppress black conscious records. I'm saying that we ourselves consumed so much of it and took it in that I think that the gangster stuff was more marketable. And the record executives took advantage of that and said, we're rolling with it. I don't think that they did it on purpose. I think they were just greedy and they just was money hungry. They didn't care what was coming out, you know? And I think that we ate it up because we're the consumers. We could have basically changed it, but that's just my opinion. Do we have any answers, Overseer, on the question? Because I'd like to get somebody else's view. And maybe we could take a call or something, because I want to know, because see, I was in it from the beginning. I was in it when we was all dancing around in bell bottoms. Nobody was gangster. You look on TV, everybody, hey, if you look on Soul Train back in the 70s, you know, everybody looked gay. You talk about dudes dancing with the tight pants on, you know what I'm saying, kicking their feet out with platform shoes. Nobody cared about looking crazy. They were just dancing, you know, nobody cared. So I come from that area, you know, so nobody was gangster. Everybody dancing, men swinging their arms around. Yeah. So, do we have a question? Do we have any questions on it or any answers over here? Let me know. I'm gonna continue on because I'd like to get some information on someone else's perspective, because it's a hard parallel. You know, it's a really hard parallel. You know, that the NWA and then Public Enemy analogy, it's a model, you know, it's a model of how you look at society, you know, and how we are dealing with the problems in our community. In that movie, the movie Do the Right Thing, the beginning, Fight the Power, basically went, they just let the song play out the whole 5 minutes. And Rosie Perez danced 5 minutes, doing every dance under the sun, and she was killing all of them. Spike Lee just said, let her dance. Just let the credits roll in. Oh, shoot. So, yeah. Remember she had the boxing gloves? Yeah. But, yeah, let me know if you get that information, Overseer. And so, really, getting back to, like, the whole thing of how the music and what they did with the music was very, very, the lyrics and music, the music was smooth, but the lyrics was very, very violent and very raw. You know, but again, I got to give you the background because, see, everybody knows that. But I'm trying to give these, you know, everybody that's listening, I always give the background on the philosophy of how things come into play like that. See, Dr. Dre was with a group called World Class Wrecking Crew. And World Class Wrecking Crew was a group that we were in concert with them. They're older. And that's where he got exposure to doing beats for a group. But they were wearing like the jackets, the shiny jackets, you know, they were doing the Earth, Wind, and Fire look. You know? And so they were looking at it from a standpoint of having the, you know, the Earth, Wind, and Fire, the shiny, you know, the shiny jackets and everything. And that's where you see Dr. Dre getting dissed sometimes when Eazy-E and them were battling, because he had sequin on and makeup on. You know, that was just part of the costume that they wore. It's not really a diss. It's more of just like, that's just how he started. And because he was making music, doing beats, he was good at it. So he was with the group and he got exposure. So I say that to say this. Dr. Dre didn't start out doing gangster stuff. That kind of fell into their lap, trying to figure out how they can be unique and be creative and create something from nothing. Not necessarily, you know, it's just, they've come up with something totally new, but you're trying to create a little niche for yourself, so you're pulling from things. Because if you go through and look at some of them records that the World Class Wrecking Crew made, they're corny. They had cuts like "He's Bionic" and "The Fly," you know, "Surgery." You know, a lot of people don't know that Dr. Dre produced "Supersonic," that up tempo beat. For instance, you take a song that put him on the map. Dope Man, right? Dope Man used a sample from the Ohio Players, Funky Worm, right? And so that song wasn't even the hit, the song that they thought was going to hit. It was on the same, it was on the B side of a song called Panic Zone. And Panic Zone was the cut that everybody was dancing to because everything at that time was up tempo, like Egyptian Lover, Kano. Looking for the Perfect Beat, Planet Rock, all that stuff was up tempo type stuff. So they basically were making music up tempo. Can we play a song? Or you need some time, Overseer? Because if you're ready to play a song, I want to play one. But just let me know. So they were making up tempo beats, and so the song Panic Zone was kind of like an Egyptian Lover type song, like a Planet Rock cut. And on the B side was Dope Man and 8-Ball. And somebody turned it over and said, yo, this is kind of different. You know, this is kind of different. Yeah, what a little bit of that Panic Zone. I want to give my idea of what kind of beats that Dr. Dre and World Class Wrecking Crew was doing before they got the break to do, which led them to the slow, low beat of all of the gangster stuff. We're gonna run that Panic Zone, and then we're gonna run like a little bit of The Fly and He's Bionic, so they get the idea. Go ahead and run it. We'll be right back.
panic zone.
No panic zone.
That's right, the panic zone. Some people call it torture, but it's what we call home.
We are the renegades of this territory, and you're the prey.
I'm the Arabian Prince,
and we're NWA.
Don't be familiar with the sound you hear.
Yeah, cut that one. Run like the flies, though. A little bit of that fly. Go ahead, run that next one. Yeah, go ahead and run the next one. Surgery. Basically, family, those are the cuts that was popular at the time. And those are all Dre and World Class Wrecking Crew beats. Now, if you're coming out of that right there, you ready for something different. You ready for something different. I mean, Dr. Dre is like, this is some bullshit. What the hell is this shit here? This is crazy. I want to do something creative. This is not like, you know, cats hitting on the table with spoons and forks. It's like silly stuff. So the whole point is he was waiting for a break to get away, to try something different. And so when Eazy-E and Dr. Dre, and that part of the movie was pretty accurate. When he came off the stage and he was performing with World Class Wrecking Crew, he had that jacket on, and Eazy-E laughed at him. Said, yo, man, what you got on? So, you know, and so what we're saying is that Dr. Dre went through a transition, and we're going to get into the next cut in a minute of part of that transition of how you have to see where a person came from. And but again, he's putting in work and he's doing the beats and stuff. But in the back of his mind and kind of like, you know, in his own time, he's coming up with some other stuff. So. Like we said, on the other side of that panic zone was Dope Man, right? Now, we're going to run the Dope Man, but see, I want you to know also, Dope Man is also a song that he pulled from an older record, and we'll run that after we run Boys in the Hood. Go ahead and run that Boys. I'm not sorry, but Dope Man. Yeah, go ahead and run that Dope Man.
It was once said by a man who couldn't
Okay, you can cut that. All right. Now, listen, remember the beginning of that song, and then we're going to run the Ohio Players, Funky Worm. This is where Dr. Dre got it from. Now, remember, he's coming from all that fast stuff. So he's ready for a change. He said, this other stuff is that crazy. Now, that's kind of funky right there. If you just don't even listen to the lyrics, that's a whole different flavor. That's funky, right? But this song, Funky Worm, is where he got it from. Go ahead and run that Ohio Players, Funky Worm.
She's here, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, thank you very much. Granny, they're expecting you. You're a little late, so come right this way. Just come right in, okay?
What? Say it now.
Yes.
Say it now. Yes. Me and the Ohio Players gonna tell you about a worm. He's the funkiest worm in the world. Okay, say it, fellas.
There's a worm in the ground, yes it is.
Okay, we can cut it.
Okay,
we can cut that. So now you see where he got it from. Again, they're taking stuff from other funky cuts from back in the day, and they're building on it. And that's really what you do when you're trying to come out of something and trying to create something new. That's what you do. You know, and I'm really, that's why we're really pushing this, to let you see how it's not just stuff that happened, just kind of like by chance. This was actually something that they were working on and waiting for their opportunity, which brings us to a question here. We got a guy named Bengals 68. He says, Minister Farrakhan was on the Breakfast Club and said prison owners paid records exec to create gangster music to build their new businesses. NWA was no mistake. Well, I have the ultimate respect for Farrakhan. And if Farrakhan says it, it's either got some real truth to it, or he wants to really make a point to make us really aware that something like that can really happen. So I'll never dismiss completely what he says, except for that flying saucer in the sky that has eight wheels. That one right there, I got to say, I don't know. The mothership that got eight wheels. But something like this right here, you know, I would listen to what he says, but I would like to know why, how. I see the analogy. I see what they're meaning. They're meaning that, okay, look, it's kind of similar to when you brought drugs into the black community. The Black Panther Party always said they brought in the drugs to create the battle lines, and they knew that anytime you bring drugs in the community, people are going to end up killing themselves, the crime is going to increase, and all of those different things are going to happen, and we're going to be able to get a whole culture of people high and strung out. That part I would agree with, if that's what they're really saying. But to say they set up the businesses, I'm wondering, are they talking about businesses of the creating the jails? Yeah, that one. I need a little more information, Minister, just a little bit more. Because, you know, I know that this stuff was, you know, it was pushed pretty far, but still, you know, Overseer, I mean, serious, where does Red Fox and Richard Pryor was the nastiest dude on the planet, man. I mean, you talk about Richard Pryor. He will rank you in a minute. He was talking about Richard Pryor was off the chain. And again, there's a guy out there that was even worse than him. If you all want to really look and hear some really crazy, raunchy stuff, look, go get a record called Little Richard and Willie. and look at the guy that had he's a ventriloquist, and he got the doll on his arm. And this is something back in the 70s. And he was talking about commercials. And it's just something I thought of just now. He was talking about commercials. And he was saying, you know, he's the doll, so he got that funny voice. Hey, man. Hey, Richie, let me tell you something, man. He said, these commercials are getting crazy, man. I seen a Kotex on TV and such, and the girls, you know, he talking like that. He said, I can see 20 years down the line where you could be sitting on the toilet. And you basically is doing a commercial. You sit on the toilet and you wipe your behind and then put it up to the screen and say, see how much crap I got off my butt from brand X from over here to brand B? And I thought that was the nastiest, craziest thing to even say. That's crazy. And that was 20 years ago. And I cleaned it up. He didn't use crap. So I just don't think, I don't think that it's so much what they're saying. It is that much different than some of the things that happened before. I think the difference is like I said before, it's a reoccurring philosophy that we've had here, is that we are taking this stuff in so much that we're taking it literal. We're taking it more literal than we should. It's a song, it's a movie, it's a record. And so it's entertainment. When you look at a movie, you don't think people are really dying in the movie. But I do get it that young kids are very impressionable. And so some of that we need to be tapering back, but I can't say that it's just, you know, I look at it, there is an aspect of freedom of speech that's there, but you do have to kind of, like, you know, be a little careful. But with all of those other things, I just think that we take stuff too serious. Okay. Yeah, I was saying that too. Yeah, the prison owners wanted more jail, you know. But again, I still would say that if we're consuming it, if we didn't take it that serious, if we tapered back on some of that where we just said, oh, you know, that's just a movie, you know, we wouldn't have been fighting and going back and forth with it so much. I just think we take it too little. That's my idea. Okay, so getting back to these things, okay, I can't forget Ice-T again. Ice-T came out about 3 years later after them, and he came out with Cop Killer. And that was the first time they put a parental advisory label on an album. So Ice-T got into the mix too. So now you got two songs. You got F the Police, you got Cop Killer. and now Ice-T is in the mix, you know? And so I think it's just really, you know, it does get to a point where everybody's trying to basically be more X-rated or more gangster or more crazy than the previous person. So it is kind of like a race to the bottom. And by that time, a Public Enemy is starting to fade out. Conscious rap is starting to fade out. I'll tell you another thing too, Overseer, that really, what really was the demise of Public Enemy was not really, well, I don't. Some of it had to do with gangster rap. I'm not going to say it didn't have something to do with it. But a lot of it had to do with that contract and that organization called the Rhythm Method. Y'all go back and look up Rhythm Method and look up Chuck D. They got raked over the coals with that deal. That really, Chuck D had to give up like 75% of all of his earnings. So, I mean, it was really a terrible, terrible deal that they never really could recover from, you know? Okay, here we go. Rob says, the East Coast, we thought gangster rap was whack. We never took gangster rap or gang serious. Now look at us, scratching my head. Yeah. You know, see, gangster rap it wasn't about lyricism. It was about bravado. It was about bragging about how many gats you pulled and how many times you got shot. It was a different type of, you know, you didn't necessarily have to be lyrical, you know. Ice-T will tell you that he didn't get his deal because he was a great rapper. He got the deal because he said everybody that was good was already signed on the East Coast and they wanted to do something on the West Coast, and he wasn't scared to try. That he was on it. He said that's how I got on. You know, and the reason why I got the soundtrack for Colors is because I was on the same label that did the movie, and they wanted to get me cheap, so they didn't have to pay somebody outside. So I was on the right label at the right time. Ice-T is one of the coolest dudes, because he tell you straight up, he ain't bragging about he had all these skills. He know he didn't, you know. But he got, you know, I like some Ice-Cube rhymes. You listen to Ice-Cube? You listen to Ice-Cube? I mean, Ice-T, Overseer? He got one that he just talking junk. One of my favorite little joints about Ice-T. And I'm gonna get, since we late night, this was not X-rated, but it's R-rated. Ice-T said, Charlie Jam sexed a freak on a ski lift. 10 below. No, I'm talking about Ice-T. Are you like Ice Cube? No, this is an Ice-T cut. This is an Ice-T cut. And this is just him just bouncing around ideas. And he just basically just saying stuff. He said Charlie Jam sexed a freak on a ski lift. 10 below gave her the dick. It was cold and she said quit. Charlie Jam said bullshit. She said, oh my God, Charlie's dick was frozen hard. But she said she never felt it. Maybe Charlie's dick melted. Now, I don't know if that's gangster rap or what, but to me, That's just kind of creative, funny stuff to me. It's just silly to me. I mean, it was kind of cool. I mean, that's like a silly. That's probably one of the last times y'all hear me rap on somebody else's joint. But I think that it shows that they're basically just kind of talking junk, and some of it is just funny to me. Maybe Charlie's dick melted. I think that's just hilarious, man. So I kind of like some of the gangster rap, you know. I think I like some of it. So, oh man, now Cube is good too. Cube got. Matter of fact, let's take a quick break. I'm gonna play one of the songs that I like the most. That I actually gave my, I basically made my son write these lyrics down, and we're gonna play this whole song. It's called A Bird in the Hand. Now, Cube is one of the closest guys from the East Coast. I mean, from the West Coast. That actually almost gets to be a lyricist because the way he uses his words. And in this song, A Bird in the Hand, when my son was 14 years old, I had him write out every word so that he could read it and understand the whole thing. Because he talks about, again, now this is gangster rap, right? This is gangster rap. But if you listen to this song, he's talking about how somebody gets crossed up in the drug game because he's trying to feed his daughter. He's trying to basically get stuff for his baby, and he's getting crossed up, and he's almost forced to do drugs because he's saying a bird in the hand is worth more than a bush because George Bush was president at the time. So go ahead and run that bird in the hand.
Say, look at this. I've been cleaning out my nest, and I found an old book of my poetry.
Out of school cause I was a high school grad. Got to get a job cause I was a high school dad. Wish I got paid by a rapper to the nation, but that's not likely. So here's my application. Pass it to the man at AT&T. Cause when I was in school I got the AEE. But there's no SC for this junk stuff. I didn't have no money, so now I got a punch to clock out a slave. And the half a member Whitey says there's no room for the African. Always knew that I'll put rock cheese. But welcome to McDonald's, may I take your order, please? Gotta serve your food that might give you cancer. Cause my son doesn't take no for an answer. Now I pay taxes that they never give me back. What about diapers, bottles, and Similac? Do I have to sell me a whole lot of crack for decent shelter and clothes on my back? Or should I just wait for help from Bush or Jesse Jackson in Operation Push? If you ask me, the whole thing needs a douche. A Massengale, what the hell, crack a cell in the neighborhood. To the corner house bitches, Miss Parker, Little Joe, and Todd Bridges, or anybody that he know. So I cop me a bird better known as a kilo. Now everybody know I went from Poe.
I'll never get love again. But blacks are too fucking broke to be Republican. Now remember, I used to be cool till I stopped filling out my W-2. Now senators are getting high, and you're playing against the ghetto black fly. So now you got a pep talk, but sorry, this is our only room to walk. 'Cause we don't want a drug push, but a bird in the hand is worth more than a bush.
Okay, okay, cut it, cut it. Cut it, cut it. All right, so you see why we played that whole thing. That's a story of how you get crossed up. You're trying to basically do the right thing. You know, I got to, you know, fresh out of school because I was a high school grad. Got to get a job because I'm a high school dad. Wish I could get paid by rapping to the nation, but that's not likely. So here's my application. Pass it to the man at AT&T because when I was in school, I got the AEE. You know, I mean, he's talking about, you know, he has to work at McDonald's, you know, because his son doesn't take no for an answer. It's a beautiful song. And that's gangster rap. See what I'm saying? That's gangster rap. And a lot of people don't even know those cuts. If you don't, you know, if you just listen to the ones on the radio, you don't see the depth in some of this gangster rap that actually has some depth and some meaning to it. So that's just something that a little tidbit of someone who's actually been in it long enough to really be able to see. We used to listen to the whole album. Now you only have certain cuts that just make the heavy rotation, and there is no album. You know, it's a mixtape, so they only put like the main stuff on there. You got to dig deep and go into the to really understand an artist. You got to look and listen and listen to some of his other stuff. You know, so. That's Ice Cube, though. That's one of my favorite cuts. And by the way, see, Ice Cube, again, these are gangster rappers, right? Supposedly. Did y'all know that Ice Cube basically went to the Phoenix Institute of Technology during the time that NWA was making some music? They were making music, and he came back in 1988. He graduated in 1988, and they came out with that song the same year. So he's going to school and he's writing and he's basically kind of like in the mix of what NWA is doing. So these guys are going to school. So it's perspective, people. It's perspective. You know? Okay, let's take another email. Sports dude. Yes, definitely. I've been saying this for a while, but now I've been saying this for a while, yet I always got a lot of stuff about it. It added a lot of more negative stereotypes to blacks, in my opinion, making it seem like every black person is bad and out to get you. That was conscious rap. I'm not sure. He's saying making like every person is bad out to get. I guess he's talking about the gangster rap. That last line, I'm not sure about. That was conscious rap. I think that the ones got the airplay. Some of them were, but you have to look deeper than just some of those main cuts. You know, F the Police was a very, very hard cut. But again, look at Ice Cube had some cuts in it. It was tight. Who's the Mac? You know, he got a lot of cuts in there, and there's a lot of depth in there. You know, NWA didn't have many depth songs, but Cube did. And so, you know, you got to. I think that, you know, you just have to kind of like take it a little bit and say, they not take it so literal so that, you know, you kind of stay in the right frame of mind. Let's see. There's another one here. Yeah. And so let's run another one while we're taking some of these emails. The other one here that was another one, you guys know California Love, right? Well, California Love. Let's run that for a minute, and then we're going to run the other one right afterwards. All right, so run that California Love, and then we'll show the original version, and then we'll see you back on the other side, people. It's Philly Phil, and you listen to The Philosophy. California Love. can cut it. We can cut it. We can cut it. We can cut it. Now run that Ultra Magnetic. Y'all probably don't even know that group. Ultra Magnetic Funky. I'll let you know where it comes.
Yo, what's up, Cookie?
Yo, what up, Set Jay?
Yo, what's up, Trav?
What's up, Sad Man? What's over there? He's ready to get bit.
Yo, chill.
Yo, you know what? I like this beat you brought.
Yo, tell us about it.
You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna take it into my ultra laboratory.
Work with
hook
it, man.
Up.
Hook
yo,
it up.
Bust this. Now that's funky.
Okay, okay, we can cut it. We can cut it. We can cut it. Yeah. Yeah, see, and so it tells you, you know, that they're always looking for different ways to make music and kind of come up with different ideas. And he's digging in the crates. Matter of fact, on one of his albums, he's in a room and there's maybe a million, like a, I mean, not a million, it's probably like 1,000 records all over the place. But that's what we do as DJs when we're looking for music. We're looking for anything that gives us an idea of how to do something, you know, and that's what we're always doing it. All right, let's take another email. Erica, I know conspiracy theorists, but NWA was so corny, they had to be set up. Eazy-E compared to Rakim, no comparison. Please, no. Oh, I missed that one. Oh man, listen, Eazy-E, that part they got accurate. Eazy-E wasn't even a rapper. He was the dude that put the money on the table to get the group financed, to get them hooked up. He wasn't a rapper. I mean, he had a cool voice. You know, them guys weren't lyricists, you know. But I mean, it's not really a comparison of skills. You know, I would say that if you want to rate NWA, it's not on skills, it's on nerve. It's on the aspect of do you have the nerve to go up against the system? Do you have the balls? Do you have the fortitude to basically go up against the system like that? A lot of people want to keep their head low. You know, you want to kind of talk like you bad and everything, but nobody really wants to go up against the feds because feds usually win. So I look at it as not skills, but balls, you know, and just, you know, you're really, those are young kids, and they basically saying, look, we have freedom of speech, come get us. If you, you know, that's something that really is a, that is almost kind of like this, like a civil rights group, SNCC organization, that they're willing to go up against the system and get chastised and maybe put in jail for something that they believe in. Now, I understand it's just, you know, we're talking about lyrics and all of that. Yeah, I understand that. But it's not something that they were looking at it from a skill standpoint. At least I don't put it that way. Yeah. Let's see. All right. So, Overseer, let's see what she said. We have the conversation of what conscious and what is gangster. A conscious is to tell a story of reality and gangster is illusionary. You know what? That's a good point. You know, the aspect of conscious versus gangster. Gangster is illusion. It's actually illusion. It's bravado. It's actually a fake aura that you put on yourself to basically kind of make yourself feel cool or bad or nobody mess with you. It's not really a real specific tangible thing. Conscious is something that you do to kind of get your mind right. And you know what? Did we even do the mind? We're already in. Wait a minute. We need to. Did we play our mind right? Overseer. You need to run that now. We already in full swing and we didn't get our mind right yet. Go ahead and run our minds right. We need to get our minds right.
Need a head job. Listen to my philosophy.
You're gonna get your mind right.
I got my mind right, boy.
And I mean right. Oh, come on!
Philosophy.
His mind ain't right.
The philosophy.
Some man you just can't read.
We fail.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Which is the way he wants. Well, he gets.
Listen to the philosophy. It's Billy Bill every Thursday night at 8 p.m. on thechosen.org.
You got your mind right.
Okay. We've been getting the mind right. We didn't even put our intro in there. My bad, peoples. My bad. All right. Welcome back to The Philosophy. This is Philly Phil. All right. So we're talking about, look, there's an aspect of consciousness and there's an aspect of gangsterism. And gangster is illusion. I mean, all of the gangsters that have ever been gangsters, they basically, all of them pretty much died. You know, it's a bravado type thing where, you know, you think you're bulletproof and none of them have been. Very short lifespan. Consciousness basically gets you into a mindset that you are above, you know, you're aware of certain things and you're knowledgeable and you understand who you are as a human being, your responsibility, you know, what you're supposed to do, you know, what your purpose is. It's more of an enlightenment type scenario and more of a power position. And it's not illusion. You know, you really would feel much. You feel good about it. Yeah. And so. Yeah, and yeah, you're right. Maybe not non-lyrical. Yeah, true that. And so, really, as we kind of come to some type of like a point of reflection, the whole purpose, I think, the whole process. And the whole thing about gangster rap and did it eclipse black conscious rap, I think that it did have an effect. And I think that the way that we actually consumed it probably helped to the contrary, you know, of because we're consuming it, we're intrigued by gangster things too, because it's cool to be gangster, sneaky. You know, you basically kind of, you know, you're intrigued by the whole nostalgia of, you know, these people that are, you know, gangsters, and it's always been that way, you know. But I think that in terms of NWA, you know, NWA stands for Niggas with Attitude. I would say that if we just took that phrase and really analyzed it, even that title is revolutionary. Because what did the white folks used to call uppity Negroes who didn't act right or didn't obey their master? What did they call them? They said that this big burly Negro or nigger was uppity. He got an attitude problem. You know, he's uppity. He's basically, you know, it was kind of like, you know, you basically came in that same category. You had some kind of attitude. You had some kind of problem. You know, what did they used to say? You know, something wrong with you, boy? You got a problem, boy? You know, so nigger with attitude is a title that many, many revolutionaries would welcome that title. And so I came up with a list, and we can ask some people, you know, matter of fact, ask that question. Ask this question, Overseer. What do they think of the phrase nigger with attitude? And you know, some kind of way ask, do you know anybody that's a nigger with attitude? You know, because I'll give you guys a little hint because we're winding it up. A nigger with attitude would have been Malcolm X, right? That's a nigger with attitude, right? Matter of fact, Martin Luther King would have been a nigger with attitude in terms of the people that are trying to give him a title to say, hey, he's not following the status quo. So if you're not following the status quo, you're a nigger with attitude. You're not following the program, and we need to whip you, right? So that title alone is revolutionary in itself. Not necessarily all the lyrics, condoning the lyrics, but just in the aspect of the title. You know, Stokely Carmichael, we can go down the line. Ida B. Wells. Oprah might be a nigger with attitude. Dick Gregory, Al Sharpton, Eric Dyson, anybody that did not follow the program like they were supposed to, and they came up with their own way of doing something that they didn't follow the rules, you would be considered a nigger with an attitude. And so my point in terms of that is, I don't even know if they meant it that way. But if you really put it in perspective, that's what it is. Anybody, Harriet Tubman would have been a niggerette with an attitude, because she don't like, she's not following the status quo. She's not going to accept being a slave. So she would have been NWA. She would have been NWA. And so we need to really put it in those kind of perspectives. Not all the way did they say we're going to just condone the lyrics, but just the aspect of what they did. That is something that should be credited, right? And last but not least, let's do some, you know, I was trying to do some thoughts, some takeaways, like some moral takeaways, you know. Again, number one, the rap industry is not literal, people. It's not literal. If we can understand movies and lyrics and all that stuff, is not literal. You don't take it literal. The Bible isn't literal. You have to know that some of these things, you have to understand them, not emulate them completely. It's not literal, right? Gangster and business doesn't mix. Mace once said, "You can't be gangster and a rapper at the same time." And I've seen that over the years myself. Because if you gangster and business, if you gangster and rapper at the same time, or business, you're eventually not going to make it. Hence, Suge Knight. Suge Knight is Good Knight. He's trying to be gangster in business. You know, he's done. He's been done for a while. You know, you can't do it. You can't mix the two, right? Another takeaway from the movie, and just from the aspect of NWA and some of the stuff that we're talking about, you need other people around you with like mind and like goals to be successful. You can't do it by yourself. Those guys in NWA, Dr. Dre was the beats person. Ice Cube was the lyricist and the writer. Eazy-E was the financier. DJ Yella was the DJ. DOC, who was the honorary member, he was the speech and lyrics. He would help people, you know, how to flow. He was the flow teacher. They had different people in different aspects that they all came together, right? All right, in the aspect of freedom of speech, that's another big one. That's a moral takeaway. Freedom of speech, whether you like it or not. That's a big one, because Republicans talk about that all the time. Freedom of speech, right? Another one, kind of similar to you need others, camaraderie and the love between brothers. That is important. That even though you argue and you have bad times and you have things that you disagree with, that you know that y'all close enough to where y'all can come back together and still make history and do things. Families fight all the time, but you have to be able to get past it, right? All of the drugs and the environment that they were in, this is another moral takeaway. They were in an environment that was crazy. Bloods, Crips, drugs, drama, and that still didn't stop them. It caught some of their brothers and sisters, and who got killed? Dr. Dre's brother got killed. Still didn't stop them, right? Another big one is that I love the fact that they had women in the movie helping Dr. Dre and Ice Cube. They had their wives in there. That's another big one. You know, Eazy-E's wife helped him find out that his contract was a bad contract. She said, "I'll check it out. Go ahead and do what you got to do." They had his back. You know, they had his back. The women had the dude's back. They were part of it. They weren't on the sideline. They were part of the whole process. That's another takeaway. The aspect of AIDS. AIDS was a huge takeaway in there. You know, you can't discount AIDS. I mean, that's something that's in there that if you basically, like, you know, do a certain thing, that you got to be aware. That can cut you down. It cut Eazy-E's life short. So it's something that you have to be aware of, some of the things that are out there. If you get too loose or whatever, you got to know that, right? And then, last but not least, police brutality. That right there makes NWA look like prophets, because they were the ones that in 88, they were talking about police brutality. And in 91 was Rodney King, wasn't it? Right? And then you fast forward 20 years later, and it's even worse now. So they made him look like he was like prophets, you know. And so, you know, we're about ready to wrap it up. We got anything else we need to cover, Overseer? Because if we don't, let's see. Let's run this. You know what? We're gonna run the Man, we didn't even do a what's the deal, yo? Oh yeah, we didn't even do a what's the deal, yo? You still there, Overseer?
The deal, yo.
Oh, okay. I didn't even see this message. Okay. Go ahead. We can I don't even have a what's the deal, yo. Is that the what's the deal, yo? We got a guest on the line. You can come on in. We'll do it on the what's the deal, yo section. TL's on the line. Go ahead, TL.
Peace and blessings, sweet Phil. How are you?
What's going on? What's going on? I'm good. Yeah.
I got a what to do for you. I have a what to do for you.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. So earlier you had put on you put on I'm Bird in the Hand, which is like a totally dope song. And I'm like, yo, what's the deal with all that gangster rap? Like, just because he's from the West Coast doesn't make it gangster rap. And I was like, what the deal, Philly Phil? But hey, how you doing? How you feeling? Everybody, this is TL.
I'm good. well, see, it's on a gangster album. But my point was, is that that's considered gangster music because it's on the gangster album. It's not a gangster song, but it's part of his, he has a huge range. Cube has a huge range. So it's coming off of a gangster rapper's album. And so that's why I was pointing it out because of your point. That's really a conscious rap right there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's coming from a gangster rapper. So most of the time when people say, well, they gangster rappers, see only the less mature would do a whole album with the same theme. And think that, you know, I'm gonna basically do this, and you know, it's kind of like you're not showing enough range,
right?
And that's really my point was. You know?
When you look at hip hop even today as compared to, that is the theme. The theme is either you're conscious and that's your theme, or you're not and that's your theme. You know, dude didn't do Superman that hoe. Soulja Boy didn't do Superman that hoe, and then came back with Every Mother's Got a Heart. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't come back with anything conscious. That was the standard. That was the blueprint.
Well, I think, though, that I had mentioned this earlier. Back in the day, you did full albums. And so you had chance to kind of, like, flow a little bit on your album. Nowadays, you have mixed tapes, so everybody's getting out the hot stuff. Albums aren't really full albums anymore, because it costs
right.
too much to press them. So you come out with singles. And so when you come out with singles or mixtapes, you're putting your best stuff out. So it's not like you really have a full album. And I think that's part of the reason. Like Tupac, a lot of people don't listen to all the Tupac stuff. Tupac had albums. Dear Mama was on the same album as Hail Mary, you know? And that other one, he had gangster cuts on that same album. So I think that, I think what you're saying.
I think that, yeah, and I agree that you made such a brilliant point earlier when you said that the F the Police, the STP song, how
yes.
gangster
yes.
rap came out and just kind of eclipsed because that movement all throughout the 80s, I mean, chicks didn't have on. Nobody was really killing each other on TV. Chicks wore turtlenecks and did the whopping videos. And then we get to gangster rap.
Yeah.
Sexy chicks, big earrings, you know what I'm saying? A little breast showing. And then it just got out of hand. So Yeah, I totally agree how it clicked, and I just can't help but think it was planned.
Well, I think Luke had a little something to do with that too. And Luke, and we don't even know what lane Luke is in. You know, you got gangster rap, you got conscious, and then you got Luke. Luke just crazy. Luke just Miami. I don't know. And I was down in Florida with him. You know, he used to come with the Magic City Dancers. And he shut the whole street down. They shut the whole block down. You know, and so yeah. Luke actually, I think, basically put all of the strip club attire and demeanor out more in the public. I think Luke did that. I think that's Uncle Luke right there.
I think
that was more Luke than gangster. thanks, Luke. You know what I mean?
Luke was out. He came out with Two Live Crew in like 1985, so he was way before gangster.
I know. Wow. I know. That's what I mean. He was way back there. His first artist was MC Shy D. I was here at the time. I remember that. MC Shy D, you know.
That was his first artist. I just want to tell you that I love you. I love your show. I love listening to you. Just like keep on doing what you do.
I appreciate it. All right, cool. Truly high. All right, people. So now we're gonna go out on the positive note. Since we're talking about all of this NWA, we're gonna play the antithesis of NWA. Not the first FTP. The first one was The Police. We're gonna play the second FTP, Fight the Power. And we see y'all next week. And until then, peace out. This is Philly Phil. I'm signing off. Check y'all out, babies. See ya.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Fight the power! Okay, talk to me about the future of Public Enemy.
Future of Public Enemy.